Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Chulin Daf Pei Beis. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our home page. If you are already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the Daf before the Shiur. And even better, order your personal volume of this Maseches. Our address is gmarkings@gmail.com. Today's Shiur will be beginning from three lines from the bottom of Daf Pei Aleph Amud Beis. We had seen in our Mishnah a list of different types of shchitos, or situations of shchita. For example, shechting for an idol, or the shchita of the pora aduma. It may be pointed out that on the surface of things, it would appear that this is not a shchita that is l'shem achila, it's not for eating purposes. It's just like the case of slaughtering something for an idol, renders it asur bahana, you can't have benefit even from it. As a result, the Tanakhama says that such a shchita, we should say there is a machlokes tanoim to be more accurate. Reb Shimon says it's a shchita she'ena ruya, and therefore there is no restriction of oisoi ves beno, parent and offspring shechted on the same day. The Chachamim, however, say that even though it's a shchita she'ena ruya, nevertheless, it does fall under the prohibition of Oisoi ve'esbenoi, the prohibition of slaughtering it and its offspring or parent on the same day. The Gemara, three lines from the bottom, in which you can see there is a triangle featured. In the outside margin, we have a nosei mivneh, a topic heading combined with a structural note. The structural note is designed to explain the role of the different geometric forms that appear in each new sugya. In this case, we have in the outside margin featured under the Nosei Mivneh heading a triangle, and we've written Biur al Shtei Dugmois Sheba Mishnah, Poras Chatos V'Egla Rufa. We're going to try to explain or clarify two examples mentioned in the Mishnah, namely the cases of Egla of Poras Chatos, the slaughtering of the Pora Aduma. The Pora Aduma, of course, is that which was slaughtered opposite the Beis HaMikdash on Har HaZesim. Eventually, it was, after the Shechita, it was burnt, and its ashes would be mixed with water from a live spring, all designed for providing purification from Tumas Meis for people that needed it. The case of Egla Arufa involves a murder victim found between two cities. The city to which the body that was found is closer, they do the Egla Arufa ceremony, which involves the breaking of the neck of a calf, with many more details which we don't are not discussing right now. But if you shechted either one of these and then shechted the offspring, the note continues to say Loma nechshavim shchita she'ena ruya. Why does our Mishnah consider these as shchita she'ena ruya? And the Gemara will elaborate as to why this question is being raised. So as we see, three lines from the bottom, the triangled expression Uporas Chatos, we also have a little arrow to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara text. This can be aligned with the arrow found on the upper part of the page in the Mishnah. It's facing the line in which Poras Chatos appeared. The end of the line you can see above the word Poras, and then the next line, Chatos. This is the Pora Aduma, the red heifer. So the Gemara asks, Uporas Chatos Shchito She'ena Ruyahi. We should mention that you see a number 1 to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara. This is to attract your attention to the next triangle on Pei Beis Amud Aleph, four lines from the top, where there is a number 2. So the Gemara asks, is it so that that Poras Chatos, the slaughtering of the red heifer, is a Shchito that's considered Eino Ruya V'Hatanya? We have a Tanaic source, and before reading the source, we should also point out that this question itself lasts a number of lines till the top of Pei Beis, the second line from the top, and hence we've used a long question marking, the kuf that's encircled to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara text. So the Gemara asks, but we have learned that the Por Aduma, even though under normal circumstances it's going to be burnt and its ashes are mixed with the water, as we explained before, there is a situation that that shechita that you did could actually lead to the eating of the Parah Aduma. And the Gemara will explain that that can happen if before you burnt the Parah Aduma, in other words, you shechted the Parah Aduma, you slaughtered it, and then they discovered a nicer Parah Aduma. If that happens, then they would redeem the Parah Aduma that they already processed and proceed to process the second one they just found. What happens to the first one? So, after the redemption, the meat can be eaten. So we see that there is a potential in the shechita of the Parah Aduma for it to be eaten. As a result of that, then we should not have Rabbi Shimon, let us say, in the Mishnah, who said that there is a ptur, there is an exemption of Osav Esbeno on the grounds that it's a shechita, she'eino, ruya, that it's not fit for eating, it doesn't lead to eating, when in fact it does. So now, in the Gemara, v'hotanya, Rabbi Shimon Omer, and we've underlined Rabbi Shimon because Rabbi Shimon essentially is the focus of our discussion right now, because in the Mishnah he's the one that said that there is no Osav Esbeno when it comes to the shechita of a poras chatos. Yet Rabbi Shimon says, "Pora metama tumas oichlin hoyol v'hoisa lo shasa kosher." The pora duma is capable of transmitting tumas oichlin. That's tuma, that's food related, since it itself had a moment in which it could have been available for eating, or designed or designated for eating. And what is that shas hakosher, that moment of availability, of worthiness for food? The Omar Reb Shimon ben Lokish, Omer Hoya Reb Shimon, Pora Nifdes al Gabi Marochosa. The Pora Aduma could have been redeemed on the Marocha, that's the fireplace on which it is burnt. That's on the Mount of Olives facing the Beis HaMikdash. The main point is that since the Parah Aduma, even after it was shechted, could have been redeemed and become available as food, as meat for eating, we see that it has relevancy to the realm of Tumas Ochlin, and for our purposes it should have been classified by Rabbi Shimon as a Shechita HaRe'uya, a fit Shechita fit for eating. Therefore, the simple question is, why does Rabbi Shimon exempt it from Oso Ve'espeno on the grounds that it's a Shechita She'eino Ru'ya, and it's unfit for eating? The Gemara answers, Omar Rabbi Shimon Bar Abba, Omar Rabbi Yochanan, Poras Chatos Eino Mishnah. The appearance of Poras Chatos in our Mishnah is simply inaccurate. It really was not taught. It doesn't belong there. So even though textually it seems that it's in there, he is saying that the text of our Mishnah is inaccurate, or it should not have been there. Now we go to the next triangle, which is the next example that we want to question. The Eglo Arufo Lav Shita Ruyahi. Is it so that the slaughtering of the Eglo Arufo is considered something that's not fit for eating? V'hotnan, but we have the following Tanaic source: Nimtso ha'horeg ad shelo te'oreif ha'egla. If the actual murderer was found, remember the case of Egla Ruf involved our setting aside a calf in anticipation of its neck being broken by the elders of the city closest to the corpse, in the event that we don't know for sure who the murderer was. The source tells us that if you find out who the murderer was before the breaking of the calf's neck in the Egla Arufa ceremony, the animal you set aside, Teitse V'tire Be'eder, it goes and grazes in the herd that it originally came from. So we see that the Egla Arufa doesn't become forbidden while it's still alive, and if at this point you happened to slaughter it, namely, it's still alive, and as we said, if you found the murderer, the eglarufa reverts into being a common animal. So the shechita of such an animal, of such an eglarufa, would have been a kosher shechita. So why does the Mishnah say in a categorical sense that that every case of the slaughtering of an eglo arufa would not be considered a shechita shiruya lachila, a shechita that's not fit for eating, when in fact it could be fit for eating, as we just described. Omar Rabbi Shimon ben Lokish mishum Rabbi Yanai, eglo arufa eino Mishnah. Notice we have the same type responses we had before under our Poras Chatos discussion. Here we have Reish Lakish quoting Rabbi Yanai saying that Eglo Arufa truly is inaccurate. It shouldn't have been included in the Mishnah. We have a structural note before we go further in the Gemara. We're going to be continuing this discussion about the accuracy of having Eglo Arufa listed in our Mishnah as an example of a Shechita She'eino Ruya. And we're going to be preoccupied with this till the Mishnah in the middle of the Omid. We have diamonds that appear here. Under the Mivneh heading in the outside margin, we explained Chuvas Eglo Rufeno Mishnah, and we've double underlined that because the double underlining appears in the Gemara under that expression. Muva b'shem gimel amoroyim. This will appear. This answer that Eglo Rufa doesn't belong in the Mishnah will appear under the names of three different amoroyim as we go ahead in the Gemara. Why it changes names each time? Who the author of this comment is? That will become clear as we see in the Gemara. But the names you could see ahead of time through the markings of Rabbi Yanai, Rabbi Shimon ben Lokish, and finally Rabbi Yochanan. Each one of them supposedly having said that Eglo Rufa is not accurate. So now the Gemara asks, Umi Omar Rabbi Yanai Hochi, did Rabbi Yanai really say thusly that the shechita of an Eglo Rufa would in fact lead to its being eaten? V'ho Omar Rabbi Yanai, but we know from a comment of Rabbi Yanai that the Gemara will share with us in a moment, we know from what he says that the Eglo Arufa does become forbidden while it's still alive. In other words, if you found the murderer, even though you haven't yet broken the neck of the Eglo Arufa, it still remains forbidden. And hence the shechita that you do to it won't have any consequence. It won't allow it to be eaten because it has become forbidden while it was still alive. And that's what Rabbi Yanai says. Vomer Rabbi Yanai, Gvul Shomati Ba, I heard a boundary, in other words, a point in time that it, the Eglo, the calf, becomes forbidden. V'shochachti, I forgot what that point in time was. V'nasvin Chavrayo Lomar, and my colleagues came and told me, the Ridosu L'Nachal Eson Osarta, the descent into the uncultivated valley. This Nahal Eson is the place in which a Eglo Arufa's neck would be broken in the event that the procedure went ahead. However, it's even before it goes to that point, before its neck is actually broken, the simple entrance to the area called Nahal Eson, to that designated area, renders it forbidden. Now, the Gemara asks, "V'im isa lishni kan koidem yiridasa kan leachar yirida." If this be true, then could the following distinction not have been taught? The Mishnah in Sota that says, we quoted before, that if it's the murderer is found, it goes and grazes. That is before it went to the Nahal Eson. And our Mishnah that calls it a Shechita She'eino Ruya, that's Kan Le'achar Yerida. That's after it arrived at the neck-breaking site. So, if we're going to take into consideration that it really becomes usur, the eglo rufa becomes usur while it's still alive, still a distinction could have been taught that sometimes the breaking of the neck leads it to sometimes the animal that becomes usur while it's still alive, that's after it goes to the Nachal Eson, and the shechita at that point would have been considered eina ru'ya. However, if it was shechted, if the murder was found before it went down to the Nachal Eson, a shechita at that point would be effective. And that would be the case of Maseches Sotah. Being that this is a distinct possibility, the shechita of the Egla Rufa could have led it to being eaten. That would have been called a shechita haruya, namely prior, whereby the murderer was found before it descended to the Nachal Eson. If at that point it was shechted, it would have been able to be eaten. So why is it that the Egla Rufa is called always a shechita she'ena ruya by our Mishnah? Therefore, Amar of Pinchas Breid Rav Ami Anan Mishmei de Rabbi Shimon ben Lakish Masninan Law. We have learned in the name of Reish Lakish, not in the name of Rabbi Yanai. Eglo Arufa Eino Mishnah. In other words, not as we presented above in the name of Rabbi Yanai, but rather in the name of Reish Lakish. It is true, according to Rabbi Yanai, the Eglo Arufa becomes forbidden while it's still alive. And hence, Rav Yanai would call it a shechita she'ena ru'uya. However, and by virtue of the fact that the distinction that we suggested above was not made, it must be that the comment of Eglo Arufa Eino Mishnah indicating that it does not become usur while it's still alive. In other words, as long as the animal is still alive, if it would be shechted it could have been eaten. The only time it becomes forbidden to be eaten is from the point of the arifa. That is according to Reish Lakish. And hence, if you want to discount Eglo Arufa from our Mishnah, we'll say that in the name of Reish Lakish. That, once again, that the shechita of the Eglo Arufa, according to Reish Lakish, since it does not become forbidden while it's alive, if you were to have shechted it, it would have been roi lachila, and hence the dinim of Oisav Esveno would apply. And regarding that, Reb Shimon would not have said that it's potter on the grounds that it's a shechita she'ena ruya. Amar of Ashi, Kavinon Beirav Popi, Kashialon. Here we once again have a long question that will bring into question, is it really so that Reish Lakish teaches this idea that Eglo Arufa Eino Mishnah? Rav Ashi says that when we were learning by Rav Popi, Kashialon, the question came up, Mi Amar Rav Shimon and Lakish Hachi, would Reish Lakish have said that it doesn't become the Eglo Arufa does not become forbidden while it's still alive? For Itmar, has it not been taught, Tzipore Mitzora Me'emosai Ne'esorin? Tzipore Mitzora are birds that are brought by a person who was suffering from Tzoras, which involves a state of Tumah, and the Tzipore Mitzora were brought on the day that the Mitzora was declared to have completed or left his physical state of tzaras, and from that day another 7 days of tahara would be observed. But at the beginning of that 7 day period, birds were brought. Then we're not talking about sacrifices, but rather a procedure. They're called the tzipore mitzora, and the issue here is from what point do they become forbidden for personal benefit? Rabbi Yochanan Omar, Mishah Nishas Shechita, from the point that one of the two birds that's brought as part of this ceremony is slaughtered. Shimon Lokish Omar, Mishas Likicha, from the point that you purchased the birds. The Amrino on my time at Shimon Lokish, why is the purchase time a critical factor? Gomar Kicha Kicha Me'egla Rufa. He has a Gezeru Shava, a word comparison from the case of the Egla Rufa. We see, therefore, that according to Reish Lakish, the Egla Rufa is forbidden while it's still alive. And if it becomes forbidden while it's still alive, then I understand that if you shecht it, it won't lead to its ability to be eaten, to an option of eating it. And so that according to Reish Lakish, the Egla Rufa, which is the basis of the halacha we want to learn for the Tzipor Mitzora, indicates, once again, that the Egla Rufa is the source of this information, that it is usur while it's still alive, and the Shechita would not have made it fit for eating. So how can Reish Lakish be portrayed in our previous diamond as having said that Egla Rufa Eino Mishnah, that its presence in our Mishnah is a function of an inaccuracy? Elo Omar Rav Chiya Bar Abba Omar Rav Yochanan Eglo Arufa Eino Mishnah. It rather is to be taught in the name of Rav Yochanan that Eglo Arufa is inaccurately taught in our Mishnah as an example of something that's a Shechita She'ena Ruya. And that's because according to Rav Yochanan, it does not become usur as long as it is still alive. It doesn't become usur b'hanon as long as it's still alive. So in looking over the Gemara, we saw the case of Egla Rufa, and we saw it was described by our Mishnah as if it would be shechted, it would not lead to being eaten. We then challenged that idea that there is a scenario where the Egla Rufa could be eaten, and it was from a Mishnah and Sota that said if you found the murderer before its neck is broken, the animal becomes a regular member of its herd, and hence it could be shechted and eaten. Therefore, why is Egla Rufa present in our Mishnah as an example of Shechita She'ena Ruya? So to that we are answering, it truly is an inaccuracy. And this teaching is brought or taught by Reb Yochanan in the final analysis. The Mishnah. Shnayim shelokhu pora ubino. Two people purchased. One purchased the parent and one purchased the offspring. Ezeh shelokach rishon yishchot rishon. The one who was first to make the purchase of either the parent or child, he has the right to he shall shecht first. By shechting first, he is not involved with any problem, because the problem of osav spino is only when the parent or offspring is shechted on the same day as the animal before. Ve'im kidam hasheni zocha. If the second purchaser makes the first move by way of shechita, so he is zocha, he benefits from that in the sense that he will have meat to eat immediately. Omar of Yosef, the Inyan Dina Tnan. Let's glance at the Rashi to appreciate this. You can see Rashi toward the end of the narrow lines, the Inyan Dina Tnan. Hodikotoni Masnisen. The teaching in our Mishnah that said, Mishalokach Rishon Yishchot Rishon, the one who bought first shall shecht first. Lavli Inyan Isir Veheter. We're not talking about laws of kashrus, of is the meat considered edible or not edible on a halachic standard. She'im rotza hasheni lishchot rishon v'rishon yamtin ad mocher muter. If, for example, the second guy who bought, the second purchaser, wants to shecht first, and the first one is willing to wait till the next day, so that it's not the same day as the first purchaser, as the first shechita, which in this case is done by the second purchaser, mutter, it's allowed. So that we see this idea of the Mishnah when it says that the first purchaser shall shecht first is not a kashrus standard, but rather it's a, as Rashi says, aval dinhu, it's a function of a legal financial consideration. In bo'u lebeis din, if the two of them came to court, Shebo Ho'echad Lishchav Chaver Omer Ani Tzorach Yoser Imaj Mimcha. If they, let us say, came to court and one guy said, I want a chef first, and the other one said, I need the meat more than you do. The court will declare the first purchaser, he has first rights. Shamanas came lokach. He bought with that in mind. He hastened to be the first purchaser. Shilu lo mochro balabayas l'sheni vikav atzmo. Had the balabayas kept that which he sold to the second guy and he kept it for himself, halokeach shochet. The purchaser has first rights to shecht. V'chein shoninu b'toisefta perik hei. And in the Brisa, it's taught likewise, Alokech mi balabayas, hu koidim le balabayas, shamanas kein lokach. If someone bought an animal, and the balabayas retained the other animal, either the parent or child, the purchaser has first rights. Because in the purchase was an understanding that by purchasing, he is purchasing a right to do the shechita immediately. The Gemara goes on to say, Tana. We have a Tanaic source that elaborates on this. Im kidam hasheni hare ze zoriz v'niskar. If the second purchaser jumped the gun, went ahead and shechted first, he's considered zoriz v'niskar. Zoriz delo ovad isura. Zoriz means diligent, in a fast and diligent, in the sense that by his doing the first shechita, he's not violating any iser whatsoever. He's not violating any prohibition. V'niskar de ka'ochel bisra, that he benefits. That's what niskar means. He benefits in the sense that he has a chance to eat meat today. The Mishnah. Shochat pora v'achakach shnei boneha. One shechted the parent and then two offspring. Sofeg shmonim. He will receive 80 lashes. That's two offenses. Penalty, the punishment for two offenses. Each one of these offspring, being that they were shechted the same day the mother was shechted, each slaughtering represents a separate offense. Shochat shnei boneha v'achakach shochto. Let us say he shechted two offspring on one day, and then the same day he shechted the mother. Sofeg eshar boim. So if you focus on the act itself, so there was one act that was prohibited. However, and as a result of that, we should say that the Tanakhama says there's one set of lashings, 40 lashings. In other words, it's considered one offense. There is another dimension of this case, which we will be discussing later. Shochta v'es bita v'es bas bita sofeg shmonim. If he shechted three generations on one day in this order, the so-called grandmother, and then the daughter, and then the granddaughter. So for shechting the second and third generations, there was a osov espino offense. Hence, 80, which is 80 lashings, two sets of punishments. Shochta v'es bas bita. Here's a case where he shechted generation number one and then generation number three. At that point, still there is no offense that has been committed. V'achakach shochat bita, and then he shechts the middle generation, the second generation. After having shechted the parent of this second generation and the offspring of the second generation, the shechting of the second generation itself, well, that, according to the first opinion, which we have labeled here as Aleph, Sofek es Harboim, there's one act that was done, hence one penalty, one punishment is given. Sumchus Omer, Sumchus disagrees and says, in the name of Mishum Rabbi Meir, he says, Sumchus says, in the name of Rabbi Meir, Sofek Shmonim. For that one act of Shechita, he in effect is in violation of two Osov Espino problems, because
after the first and third generations are shechted, the second generation represents the offspring of the first, and it also represents the parent of the third. So there are two offenses in that one act of shechita, as far as Sumchus is concerned. Hence, he gets two punishments, namely 80 lashings, 40 and 40. The Gemara asks, why is it that in the case where the offspring is shechted and then the mother, this you could see in case number 2 of our numbering in the Mishnah, where the offspring was shechted and then the parent was shechted, that there is an offense. Why? Why should that be penalized or punished? After all, Oso v'es b'no omar rachmona v'lo b'noi v'oisoi, the pasuk says, it and its offspring are not to be shechted on the same day, giving you a sense of order, that if you shechted the parent and then the offspring, the shechting of the offspring following the parent creates an offense. However, b'no v'oisoi, if you were to reverse the order by shechting the offspring and then the parent, that doesn't seem to be included in the prohibition. The Gemara answers that really it is. And before going further, we should point out that in our outside margin, we have a nosei, a topic heading, under which we've written, Gam al benoi v'oisoi, namely, Shachat haben v'achar kach ho'ein chayav, that for shechting the offspring and then the parent, there is culpability, there is a violation. And that now is featured in the source. The Sanya, we have a Tanaic source, which, as you are already familiar in our marking system, the framed sections represent Tanaic literature. The source says, Oisoi v'espinoi. That's a quote from the Pasuk, that one shall not slaughter it and its offspring the same day. Emiela Oisoi v'espinoi. From the Pasuk itself, that's the order that's indicated, parent and then offspring, as being restricted. From where do I know that offspring and then parent is also forbidden to shecht the same day? Kishu Omer, when the Pasuk says Loi Sishchatu, and that expression is in the plural, that you shall not shecht them, or they shall not be shechted, Hare Kan Shnayim. That's a reference to two cases. In other words, once you've taught already Oiso Vespino, and now we make that into a plural, so we're coming to include an additional case, Ha Ketzad. So how is this to be understood? Echod HaShochid Es Haporo Ve'Echod HaShochid Es Ima Ve'Echod HaShochid Es Bino. If you have, let us say, three slaughterings taking place, a Pora, and then the slaughtering of its mother. So you have there a case of offspring and then parent, and one is shechting the b'no, meaning the child of that first shechita of the para. Shnayim ha'achronim chayovim. The ones that did shechita number 2 and 3, they would be guilty. The Gemara asks, "V'hai niboya le ligufei? Is it not so that I need the lo sishchatu for itself? In other words, for the halacha itself, that only if one shechts the both of them, parent to offspring, on the same day, one is in violation. In other words, what the Gemara is asking is that the expression lo sishchatu is not available to include an additional case beyond parent and then offspring, but it is needed for the halacha itself to teach us this basic halacha, not to shecht parent and offspring on the same day. Im kein, if the pasuk was just telling me that the prohibition is violated only if one does a shechita of parent and offspring, lichtoiv lois tishchot, the pasuk could have written in the singular, my lo sishchatu. What is the plural doing over here? The answer is, it's coming to include this additional scenario of prohibition, namely, not to shecht offspring and then parent the same day. The Gemara asks a question that lasts a few lines, hence we have a long question marking for this section. And that appears to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara text, where you see a kuf encircled with a vertical dashed line. The Gemara asks, Ve'akati, but still, miboyale, we still need lo sishchatu for something else. In other words, the plural element of that, de'i kosav rachmona lo sishchot, have amino chad in trei lo. I would have thought that the violation is accomplished only if one person does both animals, shechts, parent, and then offspring. And if two people would be responsible, namely one person shechted the parent and then a second person shechted the offspring, I would have thought, had it written lo sishchot, that that case would not be chayav. In other words, the second person wouldn't be guilty. Kosav rachmona lo sishchatu ve'afilu trei. So the plural expression comes to tell me, even where two people are involved, the second person who shechted only one animal, but since on that same day the parent was shechted, this second person carries guilt. So it's the lo sishchatu is telling me a halacha regarding who is shechting, but it's not necessarily coming to include another case of what is being shechted, namely that even the case of offspring and then parent would be guilty. So the Gemara answers, im kain, if the pasuk was simply telling me, was coming to b'chayev to shochtim, lichtov lo yishchatu, that they shall not shecht, the emphasis being on number of shochtim, my lo sishchatu, from the fact that that grammatically the pasuk is stated lo sishchatu, which indicates they shall not be shechted, that shma minotarti, this includes the additional case as well. In other words, I learn the halacha of two shochtim, and I also learn the halacha that there is guilt for shechting beno v'oso, first offspring and then parent, and namely by shechting the parent after having shechted the offspring, that shechita of the parent would be guilty of an oso ves beno offense. The Gemara now quotes from the Mishnah, Shochta v'es bas bita, there was a shechting of a pora, an animal, a third generation, and then a middle generation. Regarding that case where the middle generation was shechted, we saw in our Mishnah a machlokis between the Tanakama, who said that there's one penalty, one punishment of 40 lashes, and Sumphus, who said that in that case, where, let's just to review it, where first generation, third generation, and second generation is shechted, at the point the second generation is shechted, Sumphus says that really is a violation of two offenses, namely oso ves beno and beno v'oso. Omar le Abaye le Rav Yosef. Before going on in the Gemara, we should take note of our Mivneh. There's a structural note on the outside margin in which a triangle with a colored in tip is featured. We see two of them in the upcoming Gemara. These are Shnei Efshorios, two possibilities, the Birur Daita Shel Sumchus, to explain the stance, the opinion of Sumchus, that for that one act of Shechita, he is said to be in a double violation. The topic that we are discussing is in fact that, and we have written that on the side under the Noseh heading, Shochat Pora, Bas Bita, Ubeno, Shel HaPora, where he shechted a first generation, third generation, and then a middle generation. Lefi Sumchus Chayav Shmone. According to Sumchus, he's Chayav two offenses leading to 80 lashings. So now in the Gemara, Abaye says to Rav Yosef, "My taimo de Sumchus." What is the reason for Sumchus? Now, structurally, it's very important to note what is taking place. We have a long question marking, and the triangles represent, in this case, the two possibilities, and that's why it's labeled Aleph. And you'll see the second triangle is preceded by the expression Oidilma Beis. So are we to explain Sumchus like this way, Oidilma later on, or possibly like the Beis, the other or another way? Yeah, let us proceed to read the question. So Rav Abai asks Rav Yosef, Is it so that Sumchus holds? Ochal shnei zei secheiv behelim echad chayov shtei chatos. That if a person were to consume two olive size quantities of cheiv being a forbidden substance found in animals, if he ate two zayis kezesim of it, two olive quantities of cheiv in one state of lack of awareness, lacking awareness that it's also to do, that's helem echad, that between the two quantities he did not gain awareness of that which he had done was wrong, so nevertheless he's chayev two offenses. And that sounds a little bit like our case where he did one act of slaughtering the middle generation after having done the first and third generations. So for the one act of slaughtering, he would be chayav two offenses. Ubedin hu de l'sham inon ba'almo. And the truth is that Sumchus could have taught this halacha in general. V'hai de komashma lon b'ha. The fact that he's revealing this halacha in this context, in other words, that the Mishnah features this as the basis of teaching Sumchus, really, lo diach ha'kirchen de Rabbanon. The real chiddush is to show us how far the Rabbanon go. The afagav de gufin muchlokin, even though there are separate bodies, namely, in order to achieve this double offense, a first and third generation had to have been shechted. That's two separate animals had to be shechted. And even though we have this element of separateness, gufin muchlokin, nevertheless, patri rabbonon, the rabbonon still go so far as to exempt a second offense. So, according to the first possibility of our analysis, Sumchus, in saying regarding the case featured in our Mishnah that for shechting the middle generation, he's in violation of two, this is really the we'll call it a representative situation of a general Sumchus principle of Ochal Shnei Zei Sechele Be'elem Echot Chayav Shtei Chatois. Oy Dilma, or another possible analysis. Kosova Sumchus Ochal Shnei Zei Sechele Be'elem Echot Eino Chayav Elo Achas. If one ate two olive quantities of Chayav in one state of lack of awareness, he would be Chayav only one offense. One korban chatas, the sin offering, which is brought on occasions like this, where one is unaware of having violated a chiyuv of this nature. So, if that is Sumchus's stance, that in general, two olive quantities in one state of lack of awareness is considered only one offense. V'hocha hainu taima. Here, in this case where we feature the first, third, and then second generation being shechted, for the shechit of the second generation, why does Sumchus mechayev, hold the individual guilty of two offenses? Hoyo v'gufen muchlokin, because of the fact that you had the grandparent and grandchild shechted prior to the shechting of the second generation, because of this gufin muchlokin element, this is what generates the double offense. Omale, so after the presentation was made by Abai to Rav Yosef responds, he says the proper analysis of why Sumchus holds his chayef 2 is based on the first possibility, the first approach. In, he says, yes, Kosovar he holds, namely Sumchus holds, Ochal Shnei Zeisei Chelev Behelom Echod Chayov Shtei Chatos. If one eats two olive quantities of Chelev in one state of lack of awareness, Nevertheless, he is chayev a double offense. And the fact that it was done in one state of lack of awareness doesn't make it into a singular offense. The Gemara asks, Mimai, from where do we know this? Now, we should point out that we're about to start a long answer, or more accurately, later, a long attempt. We see in the course of the Gemara some new geometric forms. So before going further in the Gemara, let us glance at the outside margin under the Mivneh heading. And you'll notice that we have an indication that this goes until Pei Gimel Amud Aleph. And that means it continues to the next Omid of Gemara. We have a triangle featured here. Minayin Shesumchus Sover. From where do we know that Sumchus holds Ochal Shnei Zei Sechele Behelem Echod Chayov Shtei Chatos? That one state of lack of awareness, since it involves two separate quantities, even though it's one state of lack of awareness, he's Chayov for two offenses. Shtei Chatos literally is two sin offerings. That shows us that it's considered as if it's a double offense. So that will be the role of the triangle, to find out what source is it that indicates that thusly Simchus holds. We have diamonds featured here. These diamonds represent, call them shlavim, or stages, in trying to understand the source. So the Gemara continues. Midasnan, from the following Tanaic source, Hazorea kilayim, kilayim loike. One who plants mixed varieties of plants, and it uses the word kilayim twice, he gets lashed. My loike, what is meant by his getting lashed? And now we're starting a series of stages to figure out what the source is saying. If you say that means he's going to get a set of lashings for one set of lashings, well, it's obvious he's going to get one set. He planted kilayim, which is a negative prohibition found in the Torah, kilayim being mixed varieties of plants planted together. The old my kilayim kilayim. And if you say he gets one set of lashings, in other words, one punishment, why the double expression in the source? It could have more simply taught Hazorea kilayim loike. What's the double expression? Elapshito shte malkios. So rather, we have to assume then when it says loike, it means he gets two sets of lashes. In other words, two violations were committed. B'may askina. Well, what are the circumstances? And here we continue in our analysis. Ilemo baze acharzeu b'shte hasros. Namely, he planted two kinds of zroyim together, and was warned beforehand. And after he did that, he was then warned again. Don't do that again. Don't plant two varieties together. Well, if that were the case, that's called bozacharzeh. He did the violation one after the other, and each one was accompanied by its own warning beforehand. So, Tanina, we have learned this already. In other words, we have learned this, namely that he's guilty of two offenses in another context, but that's already taught. So I don't need the Zorea Kilayim source to convey the same idea. The source for this point of Bozeh Chazeh B'Shtei Asros is in the following Tanaic source. Nozir Shehoya Shoyse Yayin Kol Hayom. If you had a Nozir is a person who accepted upon himself through a vow to observe Nazirus, which entails the restriction of drinking wine. So if you have a Nozir who he violates his Nazirus and drinks wine all day, Einu Chayav Elo Achas, it's considered one continuous offense, so that even though he drank all day, he nevertheless will be chayav only one punishment. Omru lo al tishtev u'shose al tishtev u'shose. The nazir was warned, don't drink wine, and he drinks. And after that, he's warned again, don't drink wine, and he continues to drink. Chayav al kol achas v'achas. He's chayav for each drinking separately, because of the fact that he was warned separate warnings. So once again, what's the case of Hazara Kilayim Kayam Loika, assuming that it's talking about a case where he planted Kilayim twice and he's going to get two punishments? Elo Pshita Vavas Achas Ubahasra Achas. We have to say, obviously, it's talking about a case of the action was done simultaneously. And Rashi cites as an example, in one hand he was holding a wheat and grape seed, and in the other hand he was holding a barley and grape seed. So wheat and grape, barley and grape, there's two types of kilayim. He's holding two seeds in each hand respectively, and he places them into the ground simultaneously. That's basachas, basroachas. And he was warned beforehand, a singular warning, don't plant kilayim. And the source then is telling us he is going to be chayav two offenses. So that in terms of action-wise, or timing-wise, the two offenses were done at the same time, and he received only one warning. Nevertheless, he gets two punishments. Money, who would author that idea? If you were to think it would be the Rabbonin in our Mishnah that argue with Sumchus, the Rabbonin who said that in the case of first, third, and then second generation, for the shechting of the second generation, he's guilty of only one offense, how could those Rabbonin, that opinion, hold in this case that he's chayav two? The Gemara explains, Ashto malhosam de gufin muchlokin. Patri Rabbonon, mind you, in the case where there was a first and third generations that had to be shechted in order to lead up to the problem, and yet the Rabbonon said he's exempt from the second offense. Hocha lo kol shekein, here where he plants simultaneously, he plants the two kilayims in one shot, one by right hand, left hand, going into the ground simultaneously, and certainly he should be chayav only one. Once again, if we have separate bodies that generate the penalty, and yet the separateness doesn't result in additional punishments, here where you have the planting done simultaneously, certainly there will be no additional punishment. Elo lav sumchus hi. So we must conclude that the source of Zorea Kilayim Kilayim, which in effect is the idea of two offenses done bebasachas, or in one state of lack of awareness, because there was only one warning, so that there was no regaining of state of awareness between the two. It was only one warning, and yet we explained that the source above Zorea Kilayim Kilayim means he's chayav for two offenses. So elo lav sumchus hi. And from here we would derive what we said, that ochal shnei zeh sechele behelam echad chayav shtayim, if he ate two olive quantities of chelev in one shot, just like the planting of the two cases of kilayim in one shot, will result in two offenses, two punishments. The Gemara says, lo, we're not going to conclude that the case above of Zorea Kilayim Kilayim Loke twice is according to Sumchus. The Olam Rabbonon. Really, the source is taught by the Rabbonon, and if it's taught by the Rabbonon, why are there two punishments? So we have to explain further. We have to say, and there were two warnings. In other words, after the first warning, he planted the Kilayim, and then before planting the second Kilayim, he was warned again. And we are taught by this Kilayim case, if you're going to ask the question of, well, why do I need that? If it's two separate warnings, I already learned that from the Nozir case. So to this, the Gemara will respond that we learn a point by the way, something new by the way. The Iko Tre Gavni Kilayim Ulafuke Midurabi Yoshia. That there are two kinds of kilayim, to the exclusion of Rabbi Yoshia. Rabbi Yoshia says, when it comes to the planting of kilayim, the Yom Rabbi Yoshia ad shizra chita usar vichartzan b'mapolas yad. There is no kilayim planting violation according to Rabbi Yoshia, unless you plant a wheat, barley, and grape seed in one mapolas yad, in one putting in the ground, one hand thrusting into the ground, where he puts all three seeds in one hole. That is the only time, according to Rabbi Yoshua, that there will be a punishment or guilt. Chomash Malon, what we are teaching here in the brief source above by the first triangle of Hazor Kilam Kilayim Loike, that's the Chizor Achita V'Chartzon, Oy Se'iru V'Chartzon, Nami Mechayev. Even with the planting of the wheat seed together with the grape and nothing else, or the barley and grape seed with nothing else, those would also be chayav. Going beyond, Rabbi Yoshua said that you need to have all three seeds together to create chiyuv. So at this point, though, since we're setting up the Zorea Kilayim Kilayim case as a case where there was a separate warning between the two Kilayim planting offense, there was a separate warning, and we set it up according to the Rabbanon, so we don't have a source in which Sumchus is seen saying Oichel Shnei Zeise Chebe Be'elam Echad is Chayev two Chatos Toshma. So we try another source. This is a Tanaic source coming from the case of Gid HaNoshe, and we'll be talking about one animal. Ochal Mizeh Kezayas U'Mizeh Kezayas. If he ate from two Gid HaNoshes. Gid HaNoshe is a nerve in the hind leg of the animal. So it says he ate, this source is telling us he ate two Gid HaNoshes from one animal. Sofeg Shmoinim. Rabbi Omer Eino Sofeg Elo Arboim. According to the Tanakama, who we don't see a name right now, he says there are two offenses, and according to Buddha, he is chayav only one. Let us glance at the Rashi. As far as Buddha is concerned, who says he's chayav only one, this is Buddha Letame. We're looking at Rashi in the middle of the Omed Arboim. Rabbiuda Letame, the Omar Perak Gid HaNoshe, in the Perak named Gid HaNoshe, later in this Masechet, he says, Eino Noheg Elo Ba'achas, that the Gid HaNoshe, the forbidden leg nerve, is only in one of the two hind legs, but not in each one. So if he ate two nerves, Gid HaNoshes, from the two hind legs, according to Rabbiuda, only one of them generates an offense, a punishment. Heichi Domi. Before we go further, you'll notice again we have a new marking. This is under our Mivneh heading. The house is featured. And like we had above, when we saw our diamonds, these are Shlavim Shel Birur. These are stages in trying to clarify what the source is talking about. Heichi Domi. The source we just read about the eating of the two Gid HaNoshes from one animal, what are the circumstances? If you are to think that it's the ape one after the other with a separate warning for each one, why, according to Rabbi Huda, would there be a chiyuv? Would there be an offense? Hasros safeki. The warning that preceded each offense would be at best a hasra, in a state of doubt, a warning but incorporating a doubt. V'shaminon lei Rabbi Yehuda d'yama hasra safek lo shmo hasra. And we have a record of Rabbi Yehuda holding that a hasra that involves doubt doesn't constitute a hasra. Now, before going on, first of all, we have a bracketed section, and the Gemara at this point is questioning this e-lema. If you say that it's a case of the eating of the two Gid HaNoshes one after the other with two separate hasros, then Rabbi Yehuda would not have said chayav. Skipping the bracketed section says elo pshita b'bas achas u'basro achas. So rather, we have to say that he ate both Gid HaNoshes in one shot, and there was only one warning. And the Gemara will then continue from that point with a new setup of understanding. But before going further, let us glance at the Rashi, my time of Rebuta. Namely, if you say that the case where Rebuta says he's chayav 40 is that he ate the two nerves of the right leg, the left leg, one after the other, and there were two separate hasros, two separate warnings, So the Rashi says, "My time, Rabbi Yehuda, the Amar Einus Sofei Gelo Arboim." Why is it that he? Why does Rabbi Yehuda say that he gets 40? Lo havi le lemilki klal. He shouldn't have received anything. Kol chadav chad asra sofeku. Each nerve would have been, in this case, an issue of doubt. The homis safka le Rabbi Yehuda beizem en noheg. Rabbi Yehuda is not sure which of the hind leg nerves the prohibition of gid hanasha applies to. B'shel yamin or b'shel smol. Is it the right leg or the left leg that the Torah is banning? The Katoni Hosam, it says there in the Gemara, and later in this Masechta, Badas Machras Shehu Shel Yamin. The Das, the one's logic, would resolve that it's the right leg nerve. The Ibaya Laho, and the Gemara later in this Perek asks, is it Pshito Le Shel Yamin Umay Das Das Torah? When Rabbi Yehuda says it's the right, is he saying that out of certainty? And when he says the das machras means it's the das of Torah that decides, oi sfuke mesafkalei, or in is Rabbi Yehuda's conclusion that it's the right is really a conclusion out of doubt? Umay das, and when Rabbi Yehuda said a das machras, what does he mean? Das noite, that it's what one's logic would tend toward saying it's the right nerve. Umidalo pashte meha the mifsha pshitalei, from the fact that it wasn't resolved from here that it's obvious. The Gemara there could have cited Rabbi Yehuda here in saying that he's high of 40 and used this as a basis of saying, well, you see that Rabbi Yehuda has a definite stance. Shma mino lav pishte asros komar. It must be that the case in which Rabbi Yehuda said he's high of 40 is not talking about a case of two separate hasros. The Hashaminon lay the Omar hasros sofek lo shmo hasros. We know that when a warning is issued in a state of doubt, according to Rabbi Yehuda, that does not constitute a warning. That will be shown and demonstrated by the Gemara as we go on in the Gemara itself. So at this point, to set up the double gid hanoshe eating, and Rabbi Yehuda says he is high of 40, it's not this case that's featured in the Ilema. And why not? Because if it were where it was bozach harzeh, and working with the assumption that Rabbi Yehuda is not sure which one it is, right leg or left leg, then being that Rabbi Yehuda is not sure, then each warning prior to his eating the right one would have been a warning involving doubt that, hey, don't eat that. This might be the forbidden gid hanasha. And likewise, when he came to eat the left one and was warned ahead of time, we would in effect be saying, don't eat that. This might be the gid hanasha. Well, according to Rabbi Yehuda, that kind of warning isn't a warning. And if there's no warning, if there's no effective warning, there is no lashing either. Desanya, here we have the Tanaic source in which Rabbi Yehuda presents himself as holding that a hasra sofek would not be a hasra, as is illustrated. Hika ezev chazav hika ezev. Well, a little bit of background before we learn the whole source. We're talking here about a woman who left a man and remarried a second man before waiting the requisite 3 months time before marrying a second man. The reason for waiting the 3 months is that if she had become pregnant from the first man, we would know that the child that she is bearing is fathered by that first man. However, we have a case featured here where the woman did not wait the 3 months, 3 months being the period of time in which pregnancy would become noticeable. But rather before the 3 months lapsed, she married a second man, and after 7 months with the second man, she bore a child. Who is the actual father? Is that birth 7 months after the second man really a completion of 9 months since she had become impregnated and conceived with the first man? Or is the 7 month birth a function of a 7 month pregnancy as a result of being impregnated or the conception taking place with the second man. A child is then born from this woman who did not wait the requisite 3 months. So we don't know who the father is in this case, as we describe. There's a penalty. There's in fact a serious penalty, an offense for a child hitting one's parent. The source features our case of what's called doubt. He called Ezeh v'chazer v'hikah Ezeh. If he hit the first man, the first potential father, we'll say, and then hit the second one, or kivel Ezeh v'chazer v'kivel Ezeh, or cursed the first man and then the second man, each one of whom might be his father, we don't know. O shehikah shnei b'vasachas, or he smote them both in one shot. One man he hit with his right hand, and the other one he did with his left hand. Oy shekivil shneim bevasachas, or he cursed them both at the same time. Chayov for each one. Rabbi Omer bevasachas chayov vazachazeh poter. If he, let us say, hit or cursed them at the same time, so in that one action he's hitting his definite father. We just don't know if it's from the right hand or the left hand, but at that moment he is definitely hitting his father. However, bozachar ze poter, if he hits one and then hits the other, that would not be chayav, because when the warning is issued prior to each offense, what is really being said? We're telling him this might be your father. And being that we're saying it in a state of with an element of doubt, it doesn't constitute a warning, according to Rabbi Yehuda. So we see from here that Rabbi Yehuda holds Hasra Safek is not a Hasra, and it's not considered a warning that would lead to punishment. yet we have to continue our search for the comment that Ochal Shnei Zeisei Chelev Behelam Echad would be Chayav Tu Chatos according to Sumchis. Elop Shita, so in order to understand the Gid HaNoshet case of Ochal Mizeh Kezayas and then Mizeh Kezayas, and Rabbi Yehuda says it would be Chayav 40 as opposed to 0, Elop Shita Babas Achas Ubasro Achas. He ate the Gid HaNoshet's right leg and left leg nerves at one time, and with there was one warning prior to that action of eating. Uman Tano Kamo. And who is the Tana Kamo that says 80, namely two offenses? Ilemo Rabbonon de Pligi Ole de Sumchus. If you were to suggest it's the Rabbonon that disagreed with Sumchus in our Mishnah, the case of first, third, and then second generation, at the Shechita of the second generation, the Tanakama, the Rabbonon who argue with Sumchus there say only 40. Hashtu ma hosam the gufen muchlok in patri Rabbonon. Mind you, in that case where there was gufen muchlok and there had to be the slaughtering of grandmother and grandchild before we can talk about a problem. And nevertheless, even though you have two separate gufen, two bodies, grandmother, grandchild, they speak about an exemption, meaning not two offenses, only one offense. Ocha, in the case of the Gid HaNosheh, where it comes from the same animal, right leg, left leg, lo kol shekein, that Rabbonon de Pligi Olei Yisumchus, they would certainly hold it's one offense. So who is the Chachomim here that are saying that in the case of Ochal Kezayas Mizeh, he gets two sets of lashings? Elo lav Sumchus hi. It must be that Sumchus, the Sumchus that held the slaughtering of the middle generation leads to two offenses. So from this we would see the concept or the case of Shnei Zeisecheilev Behelam Echad, or in this case two Gid HaNoshes in one shot. He's chayav for both. The Gemara says, "Lo." From here, we're not going to conclude that. Oilom boze achar ze verabonan. The case of the two Gid HaNoshes was where he ate one following the other, and it's according to the
Rabbonan, and the Rabbonan, namely, not Sumchus. If it's that case, then, if it's Bozachar Zeh, so then why does Rabbi Yehuda say he's Chayav whatsoever? Because, once again, we learned Rabbi Yehuda holding that either it's the right leg nerve or the left leg nerve. And in this case, he would have had to be warned. If we talk about Malkus, we should have mentioned this earlier, but any time there's Malkus, there had to have been a warning. And each warning would have been a Hasra Safek. And have we not learned already, under Rabbi Yehuda's name, in the case of the hitting of the two potential fathers, that he's chayav only if it's Bozeh Achar Zeh, he would have been exempt? Well, so why here, in the case of the Gid Anoshes, does Rabbi Yehuda say he's chayav 40? In other words, he's chayav for one offense. V'hai Tana Sovalo Ki Idoch Tana de Rabbi Yehuda. The Tana above with the Gid Hanoshes really presents a different version of Rabbi Yehuda. In other words, you have this very often in the Shas, where later Tanoim dispute as to what an earlier Tana said. So you have two opinions within one Tana. That's what is the case here. We have Rabbi Yehuda presented with two different opinions of what he holds. So the Gemara here says, "V'hai Tana Sovalo Ki Idach Tana Rabbi Yehuda De Yomar Hasra Sofek Shmo Hasra." This source with the Gid Hanoshes holds like another presentation of Rabbi Yehuda, in which he is known to have said, or in which we will see him to say, that a Hasra that involves doubt nevertheless constitutes a legitimate, a sufficient type of warning. Desanya. And now the Gemara proceeds to show us where we will see Rabbi Yehuda holding that a warning that has built into it an element of doubt nevertheless is considered a formal warning. This source deals with the prohibition of leaving sacrificial meat over to the next day. The source of this pasuk is really in the context of the Korban Pesach. The Korban Pesach is slaughtered on the 14th of Nisan, and the night following the 14th of Nisan it is eaten as a Korban Pesach. And the pasuk says, Lo yisosiru menu ad boker, v'anosiru menu ad boker bo'esh tisrofu, that you shall not leave over the meat till the morning, and meat that is left over shall be burnt in the fire. That is the way you deal with nosar, leftover sacrificial meat that should have been eaten. It's now observed that bo hakosuv liten aseh achar loisa aseh. In this pasuk, there is an aseh. There's a positive command, namely that you shall burn it in the fire. That's a positive command. Burn it. This is following. It's coming on the heels of a negative command of do not leave over. That's what is meant here. Ba'akos of litain asei achar lo sase lomar. And this posit formation of asei following lo sase, positive following negative, teaches me she'ein loikin olav divrei Rabbi Yehuda, that there shall be no malchus. That the Torah wants us to treat this kind of offender, someone who left over meat, not with Malkus, but with the expectation of his performing the positive command. From this statement, we can infer. Let us say there had been no positive command following the lav, the negative command of lo susir menat boker. Had that been the case, then there would have been Malkus. But let's think about it. The person is shechting his Korban Pesach, on the 14th during the day, and at that point he hears a warning that you shall not leave it over till the morning. At the point that he is being warned, is it known whether he will leave it over or not? It's a suffix. He might in fact eat it at some time during the night, the time allotted for eating the Korban Pesach. So at the point the warning is issued, there is an element of doubt, whether there is a built-in element of doubt as to whether he will come to violation. In this case, the built-in element is a time element. As Rashi says on the top of Pei Gimel Amud Aleph,
The second line, he says, the chol emas de omru de asrube, at any point that they warn him, motzi omar, the potential offender can say, what are you, akati lai lahu, it's still nighttime, I still have time to eat it. So that when the offense is issued, at that moment there's an element of doubt whether he will actually come to violation. There's a built-in element of doubt. The built-in element is the time factor. So we see from here that had the pasuk not stated the positive, the asay, there would have been a chance, there would have been malchus, even though it's a hasra suffik, and this is Rabbi Huda. So we see from here Rabbi Huda holding that hasra suffik is considered a hasra, and therefore as we set up the Gid HaNoshe case in the most recent house marking, they were in fact two separate warnings. It was Bozeh Achar Zeh. The source that we're in the midst of continues with another opinion. Rabbi Yankiv Oimer Lo Min Hashem Huzeh. Hashem meaning the reason for, this is not the reason for the exemption of Malchus, namely the presence of the Asay. The reason for a Malchus exemption is because the way this offense is committed is through passivity, namely his leaving over of the meat. The Torah warns, do not leave it over, and he violates it by leaving it over. The leaving over of meat itself is no action. It's the lack of action that it causes this offense. That's called a lav she'ein bo maisa, a negative commandment without action. The chol lav she'ein bo maisa ein loikin olav. Negative commands who are violated through passiveness do not result in a lashing punishment. And the reason for that is that it doesn't parallel the archetype case of lashing, which is do not thresh your grains with a muzzled ox. In that case, that's lo sachsum shor b'disho, and following that, the Torah tells us about the punishment of Malchus. We learn from that that Malchus is given only for lavim that are like the threshing with muzzled cow. Threshing being a not passive, but an action. For our purposes, though, let's focus on what we're honing in on, and that is to show that Rabbi Huda will hold that Hasra Sofek is a legitimate Hasra, and therefore the Gid HaNoshe case is not going to be our source of Sumchus holding Ochal Shnei Zeh Sechele Ve'Elam Echad Chayov Shnayim, Chayov for two offenses. That brings us to a third triangle. This is a third stage or a third source in trying to find where does Sumchus hold this principle. And if we can finally discover that, we'll understand the basis of Sumchus in our Mishnah, where he shechts the middle generation after having shechted the first and third generations and being Chayov two offenses. So we have this source, Toshma, Ochal Shnei Gidin, Mishtei Yerechos, Mishtei Behemos. He is eating two Gid HaNoshe nerves from right legs of two animals. Sofeg Shmoinim, he, for eating the two Gid HaNoshes from the right leg, he is going to be Chayav two sets of Malchus, it's 80 lashings, two punishments. Rabbi Huda, Omer Eino Sofeg Elo Arboyim. He is Chayav only one. Rashi points out that in contrast with the presentation we made before regarding Rabbi Huda's stance on the Gid HaNoshe, from here, since Rabbi Huda is saying that there is a punishment, it's definitive as far as Rabbi Huda is concerned that it involves the right leg nerve, not like we presented before where it was an issue of doubt, was it the right leg or the left leg. From here, it's conclusive that the right leg nerve would generate the offense of Gid HaNoshe. Hechi Domi, what are the circumstances of this source? And once again, we have our diamonds used as to reflect the stages of analysis. If you are to set this up as a case of eating one after the other with two separate warnings, my time with Rebuta Domar Boim Basulo. Why would Rebuta say that he's guilty
of one for one punishment, namely 40 lashings, and not any more, not 80. After all, he ate two gid hanoshes. Elo pshita b'vasachas u'b'chad asro. Rather, we have to assume it's obvious that he ate the two in one shot, and there was only one warning. Uman Tanakama. Who is the Tanakama, the first opinion in this source that says he is guilty of two offenses? If you were to say that it's the Rabbonin that argue with Sumchus, the Rabbonin in our Mishnah, where shechting the second generation results in only one offense, and yet that had come on the heels of shechting two other animals, the first and third generations. Uma hosam, the gufin muchlokin patri rabbonin. Mind you, in that case, we had two separate animals had to be shechted in order to lead up to a problem. That's gufin muchlokin, the grandmother and grandchild. And yet, the rabbonin exempt from an additional penalty. In other words, they say only one offense has been committed. Hocha lo kol shekein. Here, where you're not dealing with we'll call it a gufin muchlokin seen as pronounced, even though here it's true that it's coming from two separate gid hanoshes, but in effect they're two right gid hanoshes. So it's not as we call it, we would say it's not as gufin muchlokin as two separate, completely separate animals. And yet the rabbonan hold, when you have two completely separate animals that lead up to the offense, there's only one punishment. So here, all the more so, there should be only one offense, and yet the Tanakama here says two punishments. That's the sofegar shmoinim, two sets of lashings. Elolav sumchus he. So rather, it must be sumchus. And then we would have our source for sumchus holding that shnei zeisechelu be'elam echad. In this case, two gid hanoshes in one state of lack of awareness, because we said there was only one warning. In this case, there's lashing, but in the case of the chelev, it would have been one state of lack of awareness. The same concept of one state of mind. And yet, we see that Sumchus, or the Tanakama here, who we're assuming is Sumchus, is Mechayev two punishments. The Gemara says, no, li'olam bozeh achar zeh. This source with the two gid hanoshes is where he ate them one after the other. It wasn't one state of mind, but rather he ate them one after the other. Udechoamris my time Rabbi Yehuda, and you'll ask, well, if that be the case, then why does Rabbi Yehuda say he's chayav only 40, which indicates one punishment? If he ate one after the other with two separate warnings, so he would be chayav two separate punishments. Kegoin deles bay kezayis. The case here is that there isn't an olive quantity in either one. In one of them, there isn't a kezayis. Let us be a little more accurate. In one, there isn't, but in one, there is. Rashi says, the les bay kezayis, bekama o bevasra, ela bechado minayu. There is an olive quantity in only one of the two gid hanoshes. The Tanakama mechayiv. The Tanakama says that he's chayiv two separate offenses. The kosavar briyahu or beriyahu, uberiya ain sricha shiur. It's considered a complete entity, and when you have a complete entity, it does not require the standard olive quantity that's associated with forbidden food items. Since it's a complete entity, it has significance even if it lacks the expected shiur, a quantity of a kezias, of an olive. So that's the reason that Rabbi Yehuda, who disagrees with the Chachomim, with the Tanakama, who says a bria or a beria doesn't generate a separate penalty. Desanya, we now see a source. Ochloi v'ein bo kezayis. If he eats something, but it doesn't have an olive quantity in it, but rather it is a complete entity, chayav. That will carry with it guilt. Rabbi Yehuda Omer ad shiyei bo kezayis. Rabbi Yehuda says that there is no guilt until it has a complete amount, a shiur of an olive quantity. And if it doesn't have an olive quantity, then it's the fact that it might be complete is not sufficient. Rashi says, "Ad shebo kezayis tekosovar lav bria choshev elo kechaticha min abehema." At least in the case of the Gid Hanoshe is not viewed as a bria. It's not viewed as a complete entity. It may be that Rabbi Yehuda on other occasions, if something's a complete entity, literally, even if it doesn't have a shiur, it would be chayav. But from Rashi here, it seems that in the case of the Gid Hanoshe, if it doesn't have a kezias, it's not considered a complete entity. It's just considered a piece of the animal. And as such, if it doesn't have a kezias, it doesn't have the quantity of violation. And that's why, if he ate two Gid Hanoshes, one of them had a kezias, the other one did not, the one that did not is not sufficient for generating an additional set of malchus. The Tanakama, who disagrees, holds that even less than a kezias, if it's a complete Gid Hanoshe, it will generate a chiyuv. But for our purposes, we end off this sugya without seeing a source in which sumchus would be reflected, or a shita that reflects this idea of ochal shnei zeis chelev behelam echos chayav shtayim. So that leaves us sort of with a sense of, well, possible disappointment in trying to find such a source. This just is our last comments, just simply to review the structure of the Gemara, which goes back to the middle of Pei Beis Omid Beis, where the Gemara had asked after Rav Yosef had responded to Abaye in saying that Sumchus holds Ochal Shnei Zei Sechel Be'elam Echad is Chayav Shtei Chatos, and the Gemara had asked, well, from where do we see that? We end off our sugyas having no conclusive source in which we see that. But Sumchus's original shita in the Mishnah is as it is, that for shechting that middle generation after having shechted grandmother and grandchild, it involves two offenses. But at this point, it may be a function of the fact that they were gufen muchlokin, namely the grandmother and the grandchild had to have been shechted prior to this, and the fact that there were two separate bodies, that's what generates the two sets of punishments. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.